Aaron, look at this. If you started making right now the maximum catch-up contributions, you took full advantage of it, and let's say that you could make, over the next, by the time you're 65, over the next 15 years, let's say you're able to make a 7% return in the market, which is a reasonable assumption. Including, the money that's in cash that's earning 4%. So, altogether, you're going to see your nest egg increase by, get this, you ready? $97,000. So basically $100,000 more between now and when you're 65 gets added. So I'm trying to tell you, it's not too late for anybody to take advantage of this.
Hey guys, and welcome to Money Talks News, the podcast. Today we're talking about things people wish they'd known before they retired. Planning for retirement is a tricky business, lots of moving pieces. Today we're going to share some things real retirees said they wish they'd known before they retired. We're going to focus on five high impact areas that can add tens of thousands of dollars to your retirement savings. I'm Stacy Johnson. As usual, my co-host will be financial journalist Miranda Marquette. Hello, Miranda.
Hello, Stacy. I'm super excited for this so that
you
I don't
think
make
you are. I'm ready to retire.
I know you're going to get lots of good stuff, but I'm going to avoid the mistakes well in advance. I'm very excited.
Me too. Listening in and sometimes contributing is our producer and novice investor, Aaron Freeman. Hello, Aaron.
Hello, Miranda. You're always super excited. It's awesome.
Well, yep. Got to be excited about something.
And you're never super excited, Aaron.
No, I stay mellow the entire time.
I'm excited. And today, you know why I'm excited? Because today we have our good friend Pam Kruger on with us from Wealth Ramp. She's here to talk about common retirement planning mistakes. Hello, Pam.
Hello, Stacy, Miranda, and Aaron.
Speaking of always excited and happy, that would be Pam. Before we start, folks, remember, we are never giving you financial advice on this podcast. You know why? Because we don't know you personally. So make sure to do your own research and consult your own experts before acting on anything that you hear on this podcast today. Okay, let's dive right in. So, Pam, now, correct me if I'm wrong, and I may be, but let's back up a step. Pam deals with investment advisors. Her firm, Wealth Ramp, hooks people up to investment advisors, a free matching service. So you have the opportunity, Pam, to actually talk not only to advisors, but maybe even to people who are retired and have expressed these regrets. Is that true?
All of it, all of the above. Because I'm talking to a network of 230 hand-selected, super competent, highly qualified registered investment advisors, fee only. Now, the conversations that I have with them, I learn, even though I've been in the business since I was 24, oh my God, what I can steal from them and learn from them and absorb from them. But also, I'm talking to actual, people who are coming to WealthRep every day. And they're saying, hey, Pam, I'm, looking at my retirement planning, and which advisor do you think knows the most about Roth conversions or whatever it might be? So I'm hearing from everybody. That's why I thought this was so important, because I'm hearing what people are saying. They're saying, God, I wish I'd known that earlier.
Awesome. Now, and you've been doing this since you were 24, so that means 5 years.
Yeah, I'm just finally becoming coming of age. Yes.
Yeah, well, Pam and I are basically the same vintage. I will not say her age, because I don't actually know her age, but we've known each other for 30 years. And as far as my age, I literally rode to school on a dinosaur. That's the truth. Okay, let's get started. Okay, Pam, we got five things we're going to cover today. Tell me a regret that I might have as a person who's retired. I wish I could go back and do it over again. Tell me.
Yeah, I think that one of the biggest is that it could be at any stage or any age. Don't think this just applies to somebody who's in their 20s or 30s. People have a mindset that says, okay, I don't have enough money to invest. I just don't have enough money after my paycheck to be able to invest. So I'm going to do it later when I make more money, because surely if I'm 48 right now and I've got kids and I've got all kinds of expenses because I'm in my consumption phase of life, I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to earn more money when I'm in my 50s. That's when I'll really start investing. And you can't make a bigger mistake that to think that small, tiny amounts of money over the course of time is a more powerful vehicle to ensure your retirement savings than trying to bulk up on it later.
So the regret would be not starting sooner, even though you didn't have very much money to start with.
And the regret is assuming that small amounts don't matter. that $50 a month won't matter. It does matter.
Absolutely. Well, now let's go to our young panelists here. And it's because Miranda and Aaron are both in their 40s. Miranda's in her 30s. Aaron's in his early 40s. I'm just being really complimentary today.
Yeah, you're right.
Anyway, they're both in their 40s. Are you guys putting aside a little money for retirement? I know you are, Miranda, for sure.
So I mean, it's kind of, I put stuff in a tax advantage. I've got a SEP IRA, a SEP Simplified Employment Plan.
Simplified Employee Pension Plan.
And pension plan, yeah. I don't know what these things mean. It's a SEP IRA. I got one of those so that I can so I can put in more than usual. Secure Act 2.0 allows for Roth contributions now to the SEP. So that's really nice. So I'm looking into that right now. But like, I don't know, kind of like you, Stacey, because, you know, you going to keep doing this till you die, but you're not really going to retire. And I look at, you know, kind of the same way. Like, I like what I do. I don't see any reason to like get excited about retirement. So yeah. So I'm kind of excited to, you know, I don't know. Like, I do put stuff away for when I need it, but I'm not.
How about you, Aaron? Where I really should be asking you guys, did you start doing this in your 20s? Did you pay them?
Yeah, but again, you know, when I was in my 20s, I was a stockbroker.
Oh,
so,
and,
you know, we had the same career start. So yeah, it was kind of mandatory and it was drilled into my head. And that was me because, you know, I was in that environment. But you know, I think what I probably didn't even appreciate then was that, you know, like I said, $50 a month in a low cost index fund like Miranda's doing in her SEP, you know, that's $23,000 in 20 years, you know, just assuming, you know, average market returns, if you will. So that's how the money kind of creeps up on you and you don't really think you can afford it, but you can't afford not to do that.
Well, you know, when you're in your 20s, retirement seems like ridiculous. I mean, it's just so far away, it doesn't matter. And so that's why so many people probably fail to plan and plan to fail.
Yeah, it's not as sexy of a goal as I'm going to buy that house. And so everybody kind of chooses, I'm going to do this over that. And the truth is, you've got to diversify everything and you've got to do a little bit everywhere. But that is like a number one regret. And I'm talking about people in their 50s, too.
Yeah.
That have said, you know, if only I'd known that I had enough income and that I should have realized that $150 a month in my 50s or $200 a month in my 50s would have mattered. But they think that it's such an insignificant amount. Surely I'm going to wait till later. It doesn't matter right now. And it does.
Now, I'm going to take a stab because I've known Aaron for many years. We're good friends. I'm going to take a stab and guess that Aaron was not throwing money into a retirement plan when he was in his 20s. Am I right, Aaron?
He was not. He was throwing money at everything else but investments. Yes. So we're a little behind on that. And no, we're not really. We're thinking about retirement, but I think it's in a different way. I think we're entering our 50s, but we're acting like we're 20. So we are. I don't know. I don't have very much in stocks. I just opened a Roth an IRA like last year.
I love Roths.
But we got lucky. We happened to own properties just before the big boom in housing. And that's catapulted us into loving real estate. And I think we're kind of still burying ourselves into that before we do anything else because we're trying to save all our money for other things in that nature.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. But anyway, the point is, start soon, even if it's a tiny bit. That's a regret that people have who are retired. Let's move on. What's the second one? Number two.
Okay, so number two speaks directly to Aaron's point. Two things, but one thing I want to say really quickly about that real estate, Aaron, is, you know, I think that you're going to find that 24 is going to be a much friendlier environment, mortgage rate wise, fixed rate mortgages. So just, you know, hang on. It seems unaffordable right now, but I do think, you know, the winds will be perhaps in your favor there. But getting back to you being 50 acting 20, how much catch-up contributions after you're 50 are a game changer. People tell me that, gosh darn it, I wish I had known, I wish someone had told me that, you know, I knew that when you're over 50, you can add more to your tax-favored retirement accounts, so your 401ks, et cetera, your IRAs. You know, you got to be under the you know, within the IRS rules. But I didn't realize how powerful they are. So contributions to your 401k, if you're over 50, you can add another $7,500 a year to your own retirement account. And that means instead of being capped at $23,000, you can now contribute as much as $30,500 in 2024. And that's in pre-tax savings. So all that money that would have gone to taxes instead goes into your retirement account. And maybe you are, you know, right now, that's helpful to you because maybe you are at your peak earning. So keep in mind, please take these catch-up provisions really seriously.
But if I put that in my IRA, then I can't use it to gamble.
That's true. That's true.
Well, I mean, maybe because, you know, if it's a Roth, then, you know, you could take your contributions out anytime.
Well, you can also gamble within your IRA, right? You can just bet on ridiculous stuff like I do.
No, that could be fun.
Yeah.
So now that's really good advice.
Yeah, I was going to say. I forgot we're doing a podcast.
I'm just saying.
Let's figure out ways to properly gamble inside of our investment account. I think
that's a whole different show, right?
But you guys, seriously.
I mean, Aaron, look at this. If you started making right now the maximum catch-up contributions, you took full advantage of it, and let's say that you could make, you know, over the next, you know, by the time you're 65, by the next 15 years, let's say you're able to make a 7% return in the market, which is reasonable assumption. Including, you know, the money that's in cash that's earning 4%. So, I mean, altogether, you're going to see your nest egg increase by, get this, you ready? $97,000. You know, so basically $100,000 more between now and when you're 65 gets added. So I'm trying to tell you, it's not too late for anybody to take advantage of this.
Did you have a calculator right there, or did you do that in your head?
I know. It's just that's something that stayed in my mind because it's so powerful. Like, I thought, really? Oh, wow. You know, when I did the math, you look at the math and you say, that's a reason why people are saying, damn it, I wish I'd known and I wish I'd done it. I guess my employer told me, but I didn't pay attention to it. So you're 50, take advantage of the catch up.
Cool. Good advice. And by the way, before we continue, Aaron said that he's 50, but acts like he's 20. That is not true. I know him. He and his wife, Sonia, do not act like they're 20. I'm going to go 14.
Nice.
Okay, nice. We're moving on. Give me number three.
Number three on the list of biggies is knowledge is power, right? But whose advice are you taking? It matters. Are you getting recommendations from a broker? Or are you getting advice from an advisor? Two different things. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not saying this because I operate WealthRamp and I founded WealthRamp. I'm saying it because I founded WealthRamp to solve this problem, because so many people need the pre-retirement advice. In fact, and then advice at retirement that's so detailed because their lives become complex when they're getting closer to retirement. Everybody's does, no matter what. And then when you're at retirement, it's like you're thinking, oh, my employer, he's kind of like my financial advisor, my employer. We've got people there all that have been helping me with my 401k. Your employer is not your financial advisor. And if you're getting recommendations versus advice, then you're missing the whole boat of tax planning and all of the stuff that really is involved with cash flow planning. It's not about investments only. It's about the tax planning and the cash flow.
At what age, Pam, do we need to do this? Because if you're talking to somebody who's 25, do they need a professional advisor?
No, not necessarily.
Okay, at what age? Because remember what we're talking about is people who retired regret. I mean, like, did they regret not getting a professional money manager when they were 50?
They regretted the fact that they were relying on, let's say, a insurance agent. And they met the insurance agent on the job because they're kind of involved with their plan at work. and they thought, okay, this person's really credible and I'm just going to listen. I'm just going to do what they say. So you act in a vacuum, you don't get holistic advice. And the whole point is that the complexity that starts happening, because, you know, Secure 2.0 and all the rules and Roth conversions, and you've got timing issues of thinking ahead. So when you're 10 years out, 15 years out, 10 years out, 5 years out, and then getting on the doorstep of retirement, it becomes critically important that you stop and you ask yourself, who the hell am I listening to? Am I listening to somebody who's really smart and cares about me and has my best interest and knows what they're talking about with cash flow in retirement? Or am I listening to somebody who's making investment recommendations? One has nothing to do with the other.
Now,
so
that's
really important.
How much money, I'm going to ask you this question, but I'm going to pause. How much money do you need before you should seek out the services of a professional advisor? But don't answer, because first, we're halfway through our show, which means it's time to pay our bills. We're going to be right back after this quick commercial break. And then Pam is going to tell you how much money you should have before you start looking for a professional advisor. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. But before we start, if you like what we do, do something for us. Share the show with your friends and family on your favorite social platforms and subscribe to our podcast. It takes you 2 seconds, but it's like the most thrilling things that ever happens to us because we're really boring. Okay, now, Pam, how much money do we need before we approach professional money management?
Okay, can I reframe it to say that it's not how much money do I need, it's how much complexity do I have?
No, you cannot reframe it. No, you can.
Right. I'll give you money examples. So let's say, somebody who's 35 years old says, oh my goodness, you know, I've got an inheritance and I've got kids and I might be getting divorced. And all of a sudden your financial life becomes really screwed up or you're really worried about it. You want peace of mind. You can find an advisor or a financial planner who is exactly at affordability level. So let's say that you've only got $200,000 in investable assets and savings. I say only, that's a lot of money.
I'm
talking about in terms of needing an advisor. Let's say it's $100,000. You can borrow some hours from a financial planner, pay a few $100 and really get on course. Help that advisor or planner can kind of help you see, here's where you are right now. And if you continue along this course, this is what your life will look like. If you continue on this course or take this course and this path, that can give you clarity and peace of mind. That's the only reason you're hiring an advisor. Now, fast forward, you know, somebody who has $1 million and up, it's a no-brainer, and they are going to pay a few thousand dollars a year for advice, investment advice, insurance evaluation, long-term care, when do I take Social Security, the whole enchilada. But the fee you pay, and here's the key, the fee that you pay them needs to come back to you in value. You have to be able to get, the fee has to pay for itself. So the question for me isn't how much money do I need to have before an advisor. Think of it in terms of I can grab a few hours from an advisor or a planner as needed, as much or as little as I like. So you're talking about starting out with like a few $100s or, you know, just somebody who has less than even $100,000 if they have complexity.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you know, what also is true is that I'm a person on the verge of retirement and my wife is much younger than me and has no interest whatsoever. So I'm basically a money manager myself because I've been doing this for 40 years. Not that I charge money to manage other people's money, but I manage my own and have been for a very long time. But my wife doesn't know a thing about it. And so should I keel over this afternoon, it might be nice to have somebody in the wings who's got her best interest at heart. So that's one of the reasons I'm considering getting a money manager. I've not done so yet, but I'm considering doing it myself.
Yeah, and the key consideration there is you must recognize that you got to hire an independent, fee-only financial advisor who offers comprehensive retirement income planning, all kinds of planning, critical tax and cash flow planning expertise. This is not somebody just making an investment recommendation.
Gee, Pam, where would we find someone like that?
Okay. Guilty is charged.
That's
guilty is charged. Yes.
No, you're not wrong though.
I will help you. I will help you because that's what I do for a living. But I did it for a living only because I wanted to solve the problem for people who were asking for it.
I believe you, Pam.
And I think that's a really good point to like look more at your complexity than what you have. And I just remember like starting out with my first Roth IRA was through an insurance agent. And I love that you talked about that before the break, because, you know, when my mom is like, oh yeah, we're going to see our financial planner, and it's actually their insurance agent, I'm like, no, babe, you're not. please let me help you find a real financial planner, please.
Good.
Because like the fees, when I realized the fees that came with the investment account that I opened with the help of the insurance agent, like for my Roth, like I was floored. I was like, what is even happening here?
I can't even tell you how many calls I have on a weekly basis with people in their 60s and 70s who are so upset over being locked in with the surrender charges, et cetera, in these recommendations that were made as investments, and they're not, they're annuity contracts. Now, I'm not saying that annuities are evil. What I am saying is that they are in the business of recommending insurance products, or brokers are in the business of recommending transactions, because that's how they make money. So, you know, imagine over the years, if your mom had taken that advice and continued along that path, and now fast forward 20 years, and all of a sudden she has a wake-up call. Those are the people I'm hearing from you guys every single day. I mean, every single week. I hear from people twice a week at least, with these stories. I wish I'd known. I wish I'd known. I should have checked.
And now they do know. Just remember, folks, commissions are like herpes. You want to avoid them.
Oh my God, I almost spit out my iced tea.
Thank you. Let's move along. See, now, by the way, that's a sentence that people will remember from this podcast. Okay, let's move along to number four, Pam. What's a number four regret people have after they've retired?
This sounds like a sleeper. It sounds really boring, but it's really expensive. They had the wrong insurance coverages their entire working lives. And there really is a way to course correct along the way, because you know what happens. We never talk about this. It's like one of the least discussed aspects of financial planning. And yet it's so expensive. I mean, but we have a love-hate relationship with insurance.
What
we
kind
know
of insurance? I don't understand. I saw this in my notes for the show before we got on the air, and I don't even know what you're talking about. What kind of insurance are you talking about?
Every bit of premium that you pay for everything. Or are you paying too much or too little? Are you overinsured for your property, basically your house, your car, your health, every business insurance, every bit of insurance that you're paying premiums on, and you might have made those choices 20 years ago. That's how I found out how stupid I was, that I was paying. I mean, I had property insurance on my house, obviously, and I was paying for insurance, and I wasn't keeping up with the coverage for the replacement cost if it needed to be rebuilt, if anything happened. And, you know, when we hear about these extreme weather events happening left and right, and you get to the point in retirement where your house is pretty much paid for or is paid for, and now it's truly an asset. And it might be, you know, the biggest one you have next to your 401k. But all along, we're just paying premiums blindly without asking for a fresh pair of eyes that's unbiased to evaluate. So that's all I'm saying.
But you said there is a right amount. How do you determine what that is?
Well, that's where you have to sit down and look at the value, look at what you're protecting, look at how long, look at comparing, because things have changed so much over 20 years. There are players in the marketplace that were not available 20 years ago, and lots of players who disappeared from 20 years ago, which changes the whole marketplace of insurance. And yet we get stuck in a rut. And so what happens is this adds up to, you know, it can add easily $10,000, $20,000 or more over a lifetime of paying premiums, simply because you never took the time to evaluate, you know, what you already have and what you already need. So it's just a task, and it just kind of, at some point, I don't do that every year, but I now know that I'm going to do it every 5 years. And I want to make sure that, you know, do you have disability insurance, you know, along the way? I mean, you just got to look at what insurance do you have? What insurance do you need? And how much is this costing? Am I overinsured or underinsured? I mean, I don't know if you guys ever remember this, but Gerber baby food, right?
Uh-huh.
Had an offer for insurance if you signed up.
Yeah, sure.
Where
life
you would
insurance.
For your baby, for your kid. People pay those premiums. They don't even know they're paying them. And that means that if your child were to die, you would collect. Really? So some of the insurance that you may not even realize you signed up for and you've been paying for it is inane. Doesn't even make sense. You need insurance to cover your, you know, like if you all of a sudden don't have any more income and you got to cover your family, you're protecting your family. So there's a time, a place, there's a right amount. I'm saying no one ever talks about this. And I think that doing an evaluation of how much money is going out of your pocket to protect your assets and your life and your everything, just take a look at it. See if you're overpaying or underinsured. You might find you're underinsured.
So I should give up my meteor shower insurance coverage?
I want you to know that I jacked my liability coverage when Aaron and Sonia started coming to my house to party.
I mean, that makes sense.
I got a life insurance policy on you.
That's a really good bet right there, my friend.
That just makes sense.
Yes.
So I actually just did this with my auto insurance for my son and myself for our auto insurance coverage. Went back through, looked through it, and I was like, okay, why am I still paying comprehensive for my son's car? Like,
exactly.
What are we doing here, Miranda? Like, the amount of the coverage for the comprehensive, especially for a driver who is under the age of 25, I'm like, what are we doing here?
How much, Miranda?
So, I was paying for the two of us, I was paying $284 per month. And because, you know, he's under the age of 25, he's the most expensive person to insure. But I had comprehensive on his car, which is a 2011. And so I was looking at it and everything, and I was like, okay, so if something happens to the car and it's totally totaled, like, I can just buy another one. And like, I don't need comprehensive. Collision is all we need.
There's
for this
a 10%
car.
Rule. You're familiar with that one?
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, like basically, oh, sorry. Go on, Stacey.
Well, I thought you might know this already, and you've probably written it before, but anyway, the rule of thumb I think was if your insurance, comprehensive insurance, let's be clear, not liability, comprehensive insurance is more than 10% of the value of your car, some people will consider dropping their comprehensive. Because comprehensive only covers you if your car gets stolen or damaged or something like that. If you're in an accident, you cause the accident, the insurance company is not going to pay for your car if you don't have comprehensive. So that's why you need to have it. You have to have it if you have a loan on your car, and you should have it if your car is really expensive. But if your car is a beater, then, you know, you might consider dropping comprehensive. Again, be very clear. Do not drop liability ever in any circumstance.
Yeah. Miranda,
yes.
Quick question. So what did you drop it by dropping the comprehensive? I just want to do the math example here. $100 a month you saved, would you say?
I'm saving about 75, which is
okay.
Still very good, which I'm
plus
still...
Like $1,000 a year, basically.
Yeah, just by dropping that on his car. So
okay, now you do that over the course of 20 years. Let's say you just never looked at it. You never bothered to look at it. That starts to become real money.
Right?
I
exactly.
thought you were going to give me a number, Captain Calculator. No?
Well, I don't know. It's like almost $1,000.
No, just say it's over $1 million. No one's going to check.
I'll just make stuff up now.
Okay.
No, but
I've been doing that for decades.
I don't want to do that.
But no, seriously though, like just the idea of checking that and, you know, going, sitting down and saying like, okay, I'm going to have a money date and we're going to look through this. You know, is all of my coverages up to date? What do I need to do different? Like, I think that makes a lot of sense.
And you know,
oh my
this
God,
is-
I'm seeing the Geico commercial in the background playing here. And this is, you know, this is like the opposite of that. It's like not to go looking for ways to spend more on insurance, but to look for ways to audit and also make sure you're covered so that if you, like for me, if I have on the Cape at my house on the Cape, you know, if the rain comes down from the sky and they're not going to cover you, but if the rain goes sideways through the window, they are going to cover you. Those tricky little things.
Yeah.
I mean, just evaluating all of this crap.
Yeah.
And just looking at all the thousands of dollars that go out the window and not knowing it.
Now, I'll tell you what I do, guys. At the end of every year, especially if there are in-laws around during the holidays, I'll say, like, you know, I'm sorry, I just got to catch up on some work. And then I'll go into my office, watch football, and then check my coverages to make sure I'm getting the best deal possible. So everybody wins. I get away from the in-laws. Oh, wait, I just remembered my mother-in-law listens to this. I was just kidding, Irene. I do not do that. Okay, we have to move on, guys. We've only got one more thing, one more regret. What is it, Pam?
Okay, this one is a huge one. You hear about it all the time with celebrities, you know, Prince, Aretha Franklin. I don't care who you are, you know, the importance of having your affairs in order. Please, please, please. At every age and every stage, no matter how little money you have. And it's the estate planning is just like a name. It's a fancy way of saying, get your, you know what, together. Because do you love anybody? Do you care about anybody? Do you have a family? Oh, don't do it to them. Just don't do it. You got to make sure that your documents for distributing whatever assets you have, you know, these are essential tools for decision making. That might come up in times when you can't express yourself. So my good friend, who's my age, and I know I'm not going to tell you my age, just literally was diagnosed with lung cancer. And she also has, you know, early dementia. So guess what? It just so happens that her financial planner just, you know, a year ago told her to get everything in order, meaning what your healthcare proxy, your power of attorney, your living will, your legal documents, you know, appoint somebody who's going to be able to take care of you. Guess what? I can't even believe it. It's you know, personally very upsetting to me. That actually is happening. She can't take care of herself anymore. And if those documents weren't in place, and Wendy, who has the power of attorneys and all of this all in place, just keeps telling me every day, I am so grateful that this was done, because you're going to make your family's life hell if you don't express what you want and how you want your assets distributed. It's not about you. It's for your loved ones. Do it for them.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to tell you guys this very sad and true story. This morning, one of my in-laws died at his desk at the age of 42.
Mm.
So sorry. Don't think that you can wait until you're 65 to start doing this stuff. It's not that hard. And I went to an attorney, but you don't have to. You can get stuff online that could work. But do something, because as Pam said, this isn't you. It's for the people that you could leave behind. So do that.
Yeah, and on that happy note.
Yeah. I'm bringing you up, then I'm taking you down.
Well, I mean, but I'm right there with you, Stacey. Like I was telling Aaron earlier. This past weekend, we're recording, you know, from the date of our recording of this, but this past weekend, two of my friends were riding in a car together and they got a car accident and they passed away.
Oof.
And
I'm sorry.
And it's heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking.
Because, you know, in the case of one of them, they don't have their stuff, in order. They don't have all of the information that where to find the passwords, where to find the accounts, all of that stuff. They don't have that together. And we've talked on this podcast before about, you know, putting together your death book.
Yeah.
And it sounds really macabre, but like Pam said, like this is important stuff and it will really help your loved ones during this tough time.
Yeah.
It's not about you. About them.
We're ending on a sad note, but the happy note is that if you do these things that we discussed at whatever age you may find yourself, you are going to be better off when you find yourself at my age, at 68. So do this stuff, guys. And if you need more information, you know there's tons more out there. As a matter of fact, we're closing out our podcast right now. Unless anybody has anything super urgent, we're closing. Everybody good?
All right.
I'm afraid we are out of time, folks, but we are never out of topic. Dig a little deeper. You're going to find links to lots more info in our show notes. And remember, if your goal is to make more, to spend less, and to retire rich, your online home is moneytalksnews.com. And don't forget to check out Miranda's online home as well. That is Miranda Marquit, MARQUIT.com. And of course, you want to visit Pam at her website right now. That is WealthRamp, WealthRamp.com. If you've got a question, comment, or topic you'd like to suggest, tell us about it. All you have to do is email us at hello@moneytalksnews.com. And one final thing, I said it once at the break, I'm saying it again. If you like what we do, do something for us. Subscribe to our podcast, tell your friends. If you like us, don't just sit there, show us. Pam, as usual, you're a jewel. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, guys.
I'm Stacey Johnson.
I'm Miranda Marquit.
I'm Aaron Freeman.
Thanks for hanging out with us, folks. We're going to see you right here next time.